The Meat for TCast is brought to you in part by Sone Lab, a recording studio in East Hampton, Massachusetts. Offering recording, mixing, and mastering of all styles of music, we even master podcasts. Email info@sonelab.com for more information. That's info@sonelab.com.
That's the record button. Have we started?
We have started.
So, this is the Meat for TCast. You might always start like that. Who knows? I'm Elizabeth McDuffie, founding editor of Meat for Tea, the Valley Review, and this is...
I'm Mark Allen Miller, sidekick and co-conspirator in Meat for Tea.
Yeah, and graphic designer and web guy and
the hats.
Host of the Cirques and a whole bunch of stuff.
The hats, there are many. Hello, everybody.
Hello. It's spooky season.
Ooh. Welcome.
I'm Elizabeth.
I am Mark.
Mark is cracking himself up.
You're cracking me up. Welcome to season. Welcome to season 4, episode 7 of the Meat for Tea Cast.
We have such a treat for you. We have a wonderful conversation with master perfumer, author of The Beach Less Traveled, From Corporate Chaos to Flip-Flops by John Berglund. That's our guest.
Mm-hmm. And it's a great conversation, I gotta tell you. Lots of fun. Definitely want to stick around for this.
Yeah, he was a fabulous guy. You'll hear all about how we came to know him and his... He's got a new branch of his perfumery opening up in New Orleans, November 1st.
Yeah.
And it's called Tijon, T-I-J-O-N. We met him at his lovely shop in Saint-Martin in the French West Indies, where I did his perfume lab, and put on a lab coat. In a room, listened to French music, got beakers and vials, and took advantage of his well-stocked sense organ and made myself a lovely perfume, which I named to Lady Macduff.
Mm-hmm. It's a good one, too.
And then later, I used his virtual lab from home, Christmas present from my sweet husband, and I made Brupri number 4.
I love Brupri. It's so good. Yes. So, yeah, we go into all of that and much, much more on this episode.
It's a delightful conversation.
Yeah, he's just a really, well, you'll find out. He's wonderful.
You guys are in for a treat.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, let's do a little bit of housekeeping. You'll find every possible way to support us right on our website, meatfortea.com. There is a donate page. You can subscribe. You can buy individual issues, either in physical print or PDF form. Christmas is coming up. Wouldn't a subscription to Meat for Tea be a great gift for that person who you think has everything?
Except they don't have a tote bag with the Meat for Tea logo on it.
Yeah.
They could put the subscription in the tote bag.
They could, and they could maybe add one of our chat books. We've got a new one coming out very soon. Actually, it's available for order now by Rick Parr. God Bless America and...
Breakfast Burritos to Go.
That's it. We're also running a special in our spring store.
Where you can get said tote bag.
Said tote bag, socks, hoodies.
Mugs, pint glasses, etc. T-shirts, etc. And what is the discount code?
Meaty Ween. M-E-A-T-Y-W-E-E. And gets you free shipping.
So get thee to a meaty wing near you.
So we've got basically one-stop shopping for you for the holidays.
Or two stops, but it all starts with a stop at meatfortea.com.
It's all right there. We'd love if you leave us a 5-star review with writing in Apple Podcasts. And you can copy and paste that review and go right on over to Good Pods.
Plant one there, too.
Plant one there, too. $5 in the Good Pods tip jar gets you a PDF of Meat for Tea.
And we also have a Patreon page, so you can go to patreon.com/meatfortea, where you can get similar goodies and exclusive audio episodes and other goodies.
We've got some cool stuff in there, and we're adding more. We're going to be adding quite soon a lovely reading given by Jane Yolen and Peter Tacy.
Yeah.
From the book they did with us.
The Black Dog Poems.
The Black Dog Poems. And they read other of their, what they call their back and forth poems, which have been published in Meat for Tea.
It's really good. It'll be going up very soon.
Q&A. And also, you can hear their delightful Scottish accents. Are you out of your mind?
That almost is going to be like a running joke. It's so good.
Are you out of your mind? So without further ado...
Yeah, I think we should just tuck right into our conversation with John Berglund of Tijon.
Enjoy. We're thrilled to have as our guest, master perfumer, John Berglund.
Welcome,
author
John.
Of a very entertaining read, A Beach Less Traveled, From Corporate Chaos to Flip-Flop Perfumer, which is going to be coming out in a second edition, November 1st. So welcome, John.
Well, thank you.
Thrilled to have you.
I'm honored to be here.
In honor of our chat tonight, I'm actually wearing Lady Macduff right now, which is well into its dry down. It might be just...
Beautiful. And I've got my flip-flops on.
Nice.
Good for you. And you're in New Orleans?
Yeah, we're in New Orleans preparing the opening of our third location, which is going to open next week, November 1st.
So the book and nice. The new location are all scheduled to do exciting things on the same day.
Exactly.
That's how we roll. When I release a new issue of the magazine, I produce a multimedia gala release party with art on exhibit and films, spoken word, live music, and those both happen on the same night. And it's a shared deadline for both things. So.
Yep.
You roll like we do.
Why not?
Why not?
Doing it all in parallel.
Yikes.
If you're going to do it, do it. It's exciting. And is this the fourth Tijon shop now? There's San Martin, there's La Jolla, New Orleans, and there's one other, right?
At Charleston. La Jolla actually shut down when our licensee got sick. She gave it up after her lease ran out. So this is New Orleans will be our third. St. Martin, Charleston, and New Orleans.
Oh, okay.
How exciting. That's so great. Everyone's got yet another reason to visit New Orleans.
Well, you know, New Orleans is really a fun town. It's a all day, all night party, but we hope to make it smell a little bit better.
I'm sure you will. And there will also be the make your own perfume workshops in the New Orleans location too.
Yeah, that's still about half of our business and kind of defines us. It's our niche in addition to the perfumes that we create.
It's a great niche.
Since we first met, we've now had over a total of 18,000 people create their own perfume at Tijon, which just astounds me.
That 18,000 people. Wow.
That's a mid-sized town.
Yeah, it is.
You could almost incorporate it as a city.
Yeah.
Yeah. The city of La Tijon, or Tijon. I don't know why I always want to put a la in front of it. I'm not sure from where that urge comes. But I always do. When I write it, I've got to correct myself because I always want to write La Tijon.
I wonder what that is.
French. I just go into like French mode and think that I need the article.
Yeah, it makes sense. The question I had for you when we met you in San Martin was fairly shortly after the hurricane. And it seemed, you know, kind of like, you know, that the towns were still rebuilding. Well, we knew they were still rebuilding for sure.
There was evidence.
Tons of evidence of it. And it seemed like maybe the tourism hadn't really picked up. I'm assuming from those numbers, it really has. Is that the case?
Well, it's St. Martin is coming back now. It's not quite where it was before the hurricane, but it's getting close. But it really had the double whammy. The Hurricane Irma just devastated the island. Direct hit. Things were really destroyed. And, you know, a year later, we still did not have television at our place. It took internet 6 months to get our internet back. And then, of course, this occurred in September 2017. So it was just about January 2019, things were starting to pick up a little bit. And then, of course, I think it was 2020 when COVID hit and everything shut down.
Right.
So just as we were coming around, cruise ships were starting to come back. COVID shut us down as it did worldwide. And now it's as we are, as everybody throughout the world, we're recovering. But St. Martin is I would say, about 80% back from pre-hurricane, pre-COVID, and is doing very well.
That's wonderful news.
That's exciting. Now, wasn't that one of our impetus in visiting San Martin as they were recovering from the hurricane and we wanted to be kind of part of the dollars that contributed to helping the place out a bit?
It was one of the reasons why I think we put our finger on the map there in choosing a destination for, you know, a island vacation. It was our first sort of major vacation together. And certainly our first out of the country together. And I think that was, we'd read that that was an island that had been particularly hard hit, but that even at that point that it was recovering enough that tourism was, you know, was a fine thing. And we're not really tourists. We don't really like seeing the touristy destinations per se. We like to meet the people. We like to go and we like to figure out where the locals like to eat and where they like to shop and things like that. And that we certainly did that. And it was wonderful. And then, well, how did we find out about John?
In the airplane.
Yeah.
What do they call those magazines?
In-flight magazines.
There's a
destination magazine.
Yeah. That was it. There's a whole big article about Tijon. I actually mapped out a whole bunch of destination places before we landed.
But let me add, that was so very special of you coming to St. Martin to support the island after the hurricane. You and others who did that really, really helped a lot.
Well, we're glad because it was rewarding for us to meet everybody that we met. And we met a lot of people and, you know, made some friends.
Yeah.
And really felt like there was a mutual love going on. Like, you know, we were loved for being there and we loved being welcomed and felt so welcomed by everybody. And
so thanked. It was just so amazing. Just checking in at La Plantacion and going out to eat at, Auberge Gourmand, I believe, if memory serves.
Yeah, just down the road from your shop. Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, a Grand Casse. Everybody has to visit Grand Casse.
Yeah.
That place has everything. But just the gratitude from everybody, from the front desk clerk at La Plantacion to wait staff at the various establishments we visited, bartenders, and we actually tried to and succeeded in cultivating friendships with people who were working at those establishments because I want to know the actual people.
And we got to
You're the best kind of traveler who avoids or doesn't seek out the hot tourist spots and gets to know the culture and the people. And that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's the most fun. And visiting Tijon was wonderful. So much fun. I still love Lady Macduff. I'm going to have to be contacting you for a refill probably. And I think I've got about maybe 8 weeks left in the bottle.
It was a nice formula you created.
Well, and doing the virtual fragrance lab and with your really well thought out questionnaire, collaboratively creating Brupri number 4.
It was
also fantastic. And that's a beautiful fragrance too.
It was challenging to pick between them too, the options that you provided. We went back and forth for weeks trying to figure out which one would be the one to get. And we finally settled on number four, but wow.
Well, actually, I have a lot of, well, not a lot, but a handful of friends that are real, what we in this community call ourselves, frag heads, really geek out over perfume and notes and perfume making. And I actually sprayed each of the five different scents on scent strips and put them in little Ziploc bags and gave them to my frag head friend, Perry Carter, to smell and weigh in. And she helped me zero in on Burpee number four, because really it was a struggle. They were all lovely.
You know, the whole virtual lab was a product of COVID. We were sitting home, the shop was closed, people couldn't come to us, and we weren't making any money. So we thought, okay, maybe we can do something online. So we kind of created this virtual lab where people can create samples of their own formula through their suggestions and direction. And it's worked out. It's been a lot of fun, and it's worked out pretty good.
I love the concept. And were we your first customer?
I think you were, if memory serves me correct.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, I sort of remember an email to that effect after I had placed the order. It was like, I think you were surprised that the website was actually working because you hadn't really even tested it yet or something like that. And it's like, well, it works because here we are. That was fun. What was I going to say about the, oh, well, yeah, the whole virtual thing can still really probably be a great thing, because not everybody's going to get to New Orleans or Charleston or you know, San Martin. So it's going to be.
Oh, you're right, Mark. It's given us a much broader reach now.
Yeah. I imagine it's been really, really good. And hopefully we're spreading the word here. Actually, that's one of the points is, hey, everybody check this out.
Well, and what a treat to have your own custom fragrance. And you get to feel proud of your creation.
Well, people concentrate so much on their wardrobe, with their shoes, their dresses, their hairstyles, their colors, when fragrance is probably the most important aphrodisiac. And because there's actually studies that show that when people smell other people and like the scent, they actually physically look better to them as a result.
Sure.
I believe it. Yeah.
That makes all the sense. I just think the whole art of perfumery, and you are my third perfumer to come on the podcast. I find that perfumers are super intelligent, fascinating people. It's an art form that I hope is coming more and more into being recognized as valid an art form as the ballet, the symphony, art in a museum. Creating invisible sculptures, that's no small feat.
Well, you're exactly right. A lot of people think perfume is a science, but it's really a combination of science and art. Because like a poem or a painting, creating a perfume begins with some inspiration and vision, and then through experimentation transcends to an inventive or original type composition.
Yeah, it's alchemy, really, isn't it?
Yep.
Where science and magic and art intersect.
I see it like composing music in a way, or perhaps the ability to mix pigment on a page or on a canvas. There's a similar kind of blend of ingredients that, when put together with a skill, but also with the creative drive, the creative inspiration, those two things combine, and you can get some real magic out of what would be just, you know, well, you, I mean, it's no accident that in perfuming, elements of the scent are called
musical
notes.
Names.
Yeah, they're notes.
You start with an accord, and there's so many parallels in the language of music composition and in the language of composing a fragrance.
Very much so.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah, it takes a similar kind of vision. And I think perfume is one of the few art forms that actually allows the wearer, the participant in this art form, to time travel. Because, right?
That's a great point. Great point, because scent, nothing more than scent, triggers memory as well as our sense of smell. So we had a customer, he said that he lost his mother when he was a fairly young boy. And she always wore a certain perfume that escapes me right now. But whenever he wanted to remember her, he would put a little bit of that perfume on his pillow or by him, and he'd recall his mother.
Yeah.
Yeah, because scent really hooks right into those memory centers of the brain, I think, like nothing else.
I have to say that the Lady Macduff that she made.
Can you still catch it?
Let's see. Hold on. I'm going to sniff on microphone. Oh, yeah. Oh,
and that's deep and dry down.
Yeah, that's the dry down. But still, that scent brings me back to the island, to the place we stayed at. And all
the beaches.
The beaches, your shop. I mean, of course, when I remember I was supposed to come back at the end of her session to help her smell them. And I lost track of time or how long it would take me to walk back from the bar down the road that I went to kill the time. And so she was like, "Where is he?" And of course, we had no cell service. I couldn't get the chip in my phone to work on the island. So we were dependent on Wi-Fi. And of course, there was no Wi-Fi to be had really enough that we would communicate that way. So it was just a matter of me coming back on time. And I remember arriving and being like, "Oh, there you are, finally."
And we'd already picked our fragrance by then.
And it was a good pick.
John.
Yeah.
John helped.
Yeah. Like Mark said, the scent returns him to the island. And that's why in New Orleans and other places now, we're trying to tell those getting married that they should create their own scent or even purchase. Just go out and purchase a new scent they've never worn before. Wear it during the wedding, because then every time they later wear it, years down the road, it'll transport them back to their wedding.
I love that.
Yeah, so beautiful. I just love the way fragrance functions in that way. And truly, as a perfumer, you're making time machines in atomizers.
It really turns out that way, unintentionally, but absolutely true.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Yay, physiology.
Yay, science. Yay, chemistry. And yay, artistry, all braided together into one.
Yep.
And I've been rereading, and it's so funny when I was at your shop and you're talking about A Beach Less Traveled, you were quite humble about it. You're like, "Well, yeah, it's nothing great." But I find it a very engaging and also inspiring read.
Well, thank you. With the second edition coming out, I'm hoping it's much improved. The first one was more of a chronological diary of opening up the shop. The second one is about half of it's gone, half of it's new, and it's more set in a story, as a real story, but as opposed to a chronological diary. So I think it's going to be a little more interesting, but still both should be a lot of fun.
I'm excited to read that.
And of course, the second edition has the impact of Hurricane Irma, COVID, and other things that fell on the island,
yeah,
as elsewhere.
Yeah. Now, what spurred you to write the second edition? Just all these events that needed to be chronicled?
Yeah. I mean, the reason I wrote the first one was kind of therapy. As I'm going through, have a bad day, have a challenge, I'm not getting my business license on time. I would just write it down as therapy. It was therapeutic. So after we get the first book published, I kind of do the same thing. I wrote down stories. I wrote down my thoughts about going through Hurricane Irma, and the real devastation was afterwards, when we couldn't get electricity or water and couldn't get supplies to build it on the island. So I chronicled that. And instead of just detailing it as a diary, we kind of try to wind it into a more narrative.
Cool. If you wanted, I would publish a little excerpt in this upcoming issue of Meat for Tea. That's just something to think about.
Yeah. And the second edition also kind of chronicled the summary for me, in that I went to the island with the island dream to escape corporate chaos, and I certainly escaped it, and I found many new wonderful events and many new challenges. But in the second edition, I was able to more chronicle how, despite the difficulties and the many amazing things that occurred, it kind of all came together, so that even when the hurricane and COVID hit, and even as I was leaving the island after 15 years of being there, I was comfortable. I was content. I was more patient than when I first went to the island. And I concluded that the island is still within me. I learned from the people on the island. I learned from a slower pace of life. I learned to stop chasing the money. I learned life is about having enjoyment and helping other people. So that's set out better in the second edition, and I think has more meaning, at least to me.
I love that so much. Yeah, just reading the first edition, just refreshing my memory of it. I love the parts where you're detailing your frustration and like visiting a post office and they're closed and they're closed again. And you just remind yourself, it's island life, man.
Yeah. Anyone who's lived on an island understands the wonderful occurrences and the third world paradise at times.
Yeah, yeah.
Utilities go on and off. The post office is shuttered. They're on strike. The cargo ship didn't get in with some food, so the grocery shelves are bare. But you know what? The sun shines beautiful every day, and the people are relaxed. And one of the best lessons I learned when I went to a local hardware store to buy something early on the island, you know, I rushed in and I asked someone, where can I find this type of whatever it was? And she looked at me and said, good morning. Understanding that before I start saying, hey, can I get this or that? You should communicate with the people and relax and enjoy life.
Nice.
And expect to be greeted in kind. Good morning. Instead of, can you find...
Totally unlike my experiences in the States.
I like that gentility and politeness. Bonjour, above all.
Yeah, I recall that as well. It was almost unsettling the first couple of days of just like how unbelievably friendly people were. It felt almost like... okay, is this a put on? And it's like, no, this is just
this is how they are.
This is just
here's the craziest thing. The biggest complaint we would get about tourists visiting French St. Martin is that it took forever to get their check after dinner. They had to ask for it. But they didn't understand that in France, particularly the Caribbean, you own the table for the night, and it's impolite. It's impolite if the server rushes over and gives you a check. You are supposed to request it.
Okay, that actually makes a ton of sense. Although we never really felt that. We never really got that impression of like, gee, how come they're not bringing the check? We pretty much just said, okay, I think we're done, and we would request the check. It just is a natural thing. But yeah, I hadn't noticed it in that way, but now in hindsight, I did notice that. Yeah, I think we had to ask for the check every single time. It was never unpleasant for us, though. It was always just like, oh, yeah, we're just welcomed here. In fact, there was a couple times where I think we asked for the check, and they're like, oh, but you, let us bring you some samples of these after dinner drinks that we've got, or
rum.
Yeah, like we got our rum, our special infused rum, and all of a sudden we're like laden with these treats that are not even put on the check. They're just like, oh, you've got to try this. Oh, you got to try this. We were already full and like, oh, well, we know you don't have room for dessert, but we're going to give you some anyway.
that is St. Martin.
And it was like, this is really cool. Again, what was the name of the French restaurant down the street from your shop there?
Auberge Gourmand.
Auberge Gourmand. They were particularly that way.
They still call Grand Cas the culinary capital of the Caribbean because of the concentration of fine restaurants within an 8 to 10 block area. Less after Irma, but still present.
Yeah.
World-class dining. And actually, at Auberge Gourmand, our first night, we went back. We went there twice, didn't we?
I think we went there twice and we went one other place. We went two. We went to several places.
But... our first time dining there, we wound up in the kitchen because, like I said, I like to make friends with the wait staff, with the behind the house people, not the other tourists. And so once you're hanging out with the wait staff in the kitchen, the infused rum drinks come out and things get really relaxed. And that's Doesn't it really feel like you're getting to know the people and the place the most intimately?
Well, now that I hear that, next time you come down there, I'll have to get down there and I will literally take you on a tour where no tourists ever go.
I would love
mostly
that.
Mostly in the French Quarter where all the locals live. I know all the taxi drivers that live there and everybody else. Tourists would feel intimidated and afraid, yet they are the nicest, most accommodating people who love to see Americans come and visit with them.
Oh, I would love that so much.
Okay, we'll definitely let you know if we're going to go down.
That would be so much fun.
We do plan a return trip when we can budget for it.
In my second edition, I don't mean to promote the book.
No, talk about the book.
I talk about French Quarter and Suki's restaurant and the house bars. These are unlicensed houses that sell alcohol in the French Quarter. Just go buy a beer for $2. But it's not so much about the cheap alcohol. It's about the friendly people you meet in that bar, real people, real locals who are really down to earth and make St. Martin what it is.
I love that. I think we drove so by some of those house bars. I think we saw some of those places.
Oh, yeah.
As we were driving around the island, you could just look and see, and there's just kind of this light on, and maybe there's like a garage area that's open or something like a garage.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We saw that a bunch of times.
We never
really knew exactly, I think, what we were looking at. So we never realized, oh, we could stop. It just sort of seemed like there was a house party or something.
No, it looked like I remember seeing some where it definitely looked more intentional than a party.
Yeah, more intentional than a party, but it's still very informal. And I think if you don't know that you might be welcome, you might not feel like you would be okay to stop and pop in.
It might feel unwise.
But now I'm tempted.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I would absolutely love that. So there's more writing about the French Quarter in the second edition too?
Yeah. Some of the fun finds that we had over the years and a little more local bent.
Do you have a copy of it handy? This seems like a natural segue.
I do.
Do you want to read a little passage about... You're writing about the French Quarter?
Yeah, give me just a second. Let's see, I've got two here, so let me choose one. So here's a story about the house bars. It says, the only way to find a good house bar is by word of mouth or by dutifully observing where crowds gather. On one occasion, we were driving home with our friends around 2 a.m. We drove through Shantytown, an impoverished village within Grand Cas that tourists usually hurry through as fast as they can. As we made our way through, we saw some ladies sitting on a front porch drinking beer. We braked, and I boldly, or crazily, stepped up to the patio and asked if they had beer for sale. A chorus of C followed, and we had ourselves another stop. The owner, Maria, was about my age and hailed from Santo Domingo. She had flowing black hair and knew limited English. Her adult daughter served as a bartender, and until the time of Hurricane Irma, we were regulars. So, and since house bars have no signage or commercial names, we provide our own moniker for each locale so our friends know where to meet us. This latest stop would be named the Shoe Bar because the lady customers all wore fancy stilettos. Other house bars were aptly named the Sofa Bar, the Patio Bar, the Apartment Bar, was actually on the porch of a second floor apartment, and the Tire Bar. You could get your tires fixed by the male owner at the latter while his seductive chica tended bar. So that's a little bit about house bars.
I love that so much.
Oh my God, that's so good.
And we'll be back in just a moment.
We have a very generous partner to meet for tea. We really appreciate them very much. Because it's through ad support that we stay in print. So without further ado, let me tell you about Sucre Bay. Sucre Bay is perfume made by weirdos like you. And they're a cruelty-free, women-owned indie perfume and body products company who love making people smell good. Each scent is crafted by hand in their Washington State lab located in the woods. And honestly, I don't know where else you can find fragrances with names like Sea Hag, Don't Panic, Siren Song, Goth as Fuck. Those are just a few of their best sellers.
So great.
They have all sorts of other things too, bath care products. And also they partner with a lot of interesting people, including our friend Sarah McCartney of 4160 Tuesdays. Sucre Bay is one of the few places in the States you can get yourself some 4160 Tuesdays fragrances.
Yes. So head on over to sucrebay.com. Check out their wares. And we thank them
for... Check the show notes for the proper spelling.
Mm-hmm. And thank you very, very much.
Or should I do it on Sucre Bay now?
Oh, yeah. You know what? How's it spelled?
Yeah. So if you just go to sucrebeille.com, that'll get you there.
Yeah. We really appreciate their support. Thank you so much, Sucre Bay.
Thank you so much, Sucre Bay. We love you.
And welcome back.
So are these house bars open until, like, when do they close?
You know, they have no set hours. I mean, everyone is different, and they're unique.
So some might be open till morning.
Yeah, yeah. And some might close at 11, and some might be open on a Friday, and somebody might close it on a Friday because they're doing something else.
It's all according to the whim of the person who runs the house bar.
Yeah. Yeah, and if they can make, you know, a few bucks by selling some beer and liquor out of their house or their porch or their garage, it's good money for them, and they get to meet people.
Oh, that sounds like heaven.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. I think, no, the tire bar, is the tire bar off of Grand Cause?
The tire bar is located between Grand Cause and Marigot. As you're going from Grand Cause, you go through La Sabana.
We drove by. I distinctly remember seeing that establishment.
Yeah, you probably did. It was up on a hill. They do tires on the right, and they had a little bar.
Yep.
You probably did.
Yep. Yeah. We did a fair bit of driving around. There were certain parts of the island we didn't get to as much. And of course, I think we went down to the Dutch side.
We went to the
twice.
Red Piano.
That's a fun place.
It was. It was. I think I made us a pretty detailed itinerary just from what was in the Destination magazine.
The founder of the Red Piano, there were two guys that opened it up. And one of the two was a dear friend before he opened it and actually dated our daughter for a while.
Oh, wow.
And he now has a Red Piano in Santa Barbara, California, doing very well.
Oh, wow. So there's two Red Pianos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that place was fun.
There was a bar at the end of our street. We were staying at La Plantation in
Orient Bay, yeah.
Yeah, by the Oriental. And there was a bar. I can't remember what it was called.
It was the Yellow Sub.
It was the Yellow Sub.
Yep.
It was the first time in my life I realized there was such a thing as French rednecks. And I don't mean that in any kind of a disparaging
way
at all. They just had a band there doing like Lynyrd Skynyrd covers.
ZZ Top
and all these French.
Was the band playing or just just music?
It was the band.
Yeah, it was a cover band.
There was a cover band at Yellow Sub that is actually the singer. Is French, if it's the same one, but that sounds like what he sings. He sings hard rock. Yep. He sings a lot of Bruce Springsteen. Yep. And he's French. He's actually my next door neighbor at Tijan. He has a theater in Toulouse where he spends half the year. Huh. He's an incredible musician. He teaches guitar and other things. And he speaks very limited English, but he sings in English wonderfully well.
Yes. Yes. I think I still have video possibly. I took some short clips of them because it was just so good.
Well, we went a couple of times because it's just right at the end, you know, there's La Plantation.
Just down the hill, yeah.
Our hill we walked down to get to the restaurants and the beach. It's just right there. So I know we went another time for an open mic.
Well, it was karaoke one night, and then there was an open mic another. We were there. We ended up there, I think, probably like... Even if we went out somewhere else, I think we ended up there.
Well, because we'd be dining at a restaurant, maybe just across this.
Yeah, or even if we dined in like Grand Cass or something, then we would come back and we would. Well, let's just pop down to the Ola Sub. They're still open. We'll get a nightcap down there.
Either there or the Blue Martini.
Oh, the Blue Martini. Yeah, that was another fun place. Oh, man.
There's no lack of choices in St. Martin.
No.
None. And there's so much.
So much fun. But the Ola, I think the Ola Sub was our, like, that was sort of our, like, our local bar.
Well, we went to the Blue Martini is where we met LOD.
Yeah, we met LOD.
Well, it was convenient to where you were staying, too.
Yeah, well, the Ola Sub was right down the hill, yeah.
Yeah. But they had an open mic night one night, and Mark took the mic.
Oh, the karaoke night, the last night we were
on. Oh, it was karaoke, we were there. That's right.
And I walked up. We just had dinner, and we were sort of closing time. And it's like, oh, the Ola Sub, what's going on? Oh, it's karaoke. So I've done karaoke 3 times in my life, maybe. Even though I've been a performer for my whole life, I don't perform live very much. And karaoke is something I've only done, I think, twice before in my life. But I'm like, oh, why not? I'll just take a look and see what they've got. And I flip open the book and, there's a section of English songs. Great. Okay. And then I see Nine Inch Nails. Are you familiar with Nine Inch Nails?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I see Nine Inch Nails. And I double check with the DJ. You know, these are English lyrics for this. And he's like, oh, yeah, this is English. I said, okay, fine. I'd like to do Head Like a Hole. Because that album came out at the same time that I was mixing my first album for my first label. And I knew his publicity company at the time, and they sent me an advance copy of that record. And I wrote my friend back and said, he's going to be big. He's going to tour his butt off, and he's going to be just the biggest name in this music scene. And she goes, yeah, that's what we're hoping is going to happen. And it did happen. But anyway, so I'm really familiar with that song. And it was one of the most fun things I ever did. I just turned my back to the crowd, stared at the screen, and just belted the song out with all my might. And it was
really good.
It was so much fun. And that was like the last night that we were there. It was like, that's the crowning moment, is I get to perform on stage.
what a great memory.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. It's like, yeah, I think my third time ever doing karaoke. Head Like a Hole too.
Yeah.
I remember all the people. At
well, you never know who you're going to see or you're going to meet in St. Martin. When we bought our property around 2005, my wife and I and 2 friends walked down to Grand Cause to a local little bar called Zenit at the time, a real small, intimate place. And there was like a small 3 or 4 piece French band playing some music. And as we sat there, in walked this good looking older guy with 3 tall, beautiful women.
Models.
They sat in the back. And when the band played a few songs, people started shouting, Johnny, Johnny. And all of a sudden, this guy walked up, went up to the band, and started singing a song with the band. We had no idea who he was at the time. Turned out to be Johnny Hallyday, who most Americans have never heard of.
I have.
But he's actually the Elvis Presley of France.
Mm-hmm.
Performed in front of millions of people at the Eiffel Tower and elsewhere. He has had a home in St. Bart's. He passed away a few years ago. It was just incredible. Just fun. A fun night. And that's what you get in St. Martin.
I mean, you've had no lack of celebrities show up at Tijon.
You know, we've had a lot of people there, and we generally don't want to disclose their name, but we have had a sheik from Kuwait who I won't name, but we have a picture. He's a wonderful, wonderful man. He walks in, 4 guys walk into a perfume shop. Think of that, wearing Panama hats. And
that's the first line of a joke.
Two guys walk in, and 2 of them say, we want to make perfume. I said, well, do you have an appointment? And they said, no, but we had room, so we brought him in. The other 2 stayed by the door. We figured out they were the bodyguards. So this guy and his cousin, the sheik and his cousin, made perfume. And I said, asked him, okay, you've got 3 beakers there. Which one do you want a bottle? He says, here's what I'm going to do. Beaker number 1, I want 20 bottles. Beaker number 2, 30 bottles. And beaker number 3, 20 bottles. I said, well, go to lunch. We'll bottle them, come back, and we'll have them ready for you. His bill was like $4,000. And our biggest sale ever. And it was, oh, that was God. Nice. And we had just before I left there last summer, we had... during all that hubbub over the Oscars, we had Will Smith's Jada Pinkett's mother make perfume, and she was the nicest person ever.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
How wonderful.
You know, speaking of, you guys were so gracious to come down to support the island after the hurricane. Another group did that, and that was the cheerleaders for the New England Patriots football team.
Oh, wow.
They came down to do a calendar shoot and specifically chose St. Martin to support the island. And they came in and made perfume and did a video on YouTube, on Boston TV for a half an hour. And part of it was making perfume at Dijon. So that was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Oh, I gotta look that clip up.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look for that. That's so cool.
If I find it before or when I post this episode, if I find it, it's probably on YouTube, but I'm sure I can find it. I'm going to include it in the show notes because that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like something that people should see. Definitely. So I'm going to steer us a slightly different direction. I would love for you to talk about what inspired you to become a perfumer, a little bit about what you were before you made that detour.
Yeah. Well, I went to college, studied chemistry and history, and I had a choice to go to grad school or to law school. So I chased the money, figuring there's more money in law. So I went to law school, became a prosecutor, opened my own law office, ran a legal aid program, and became a liquor lobbyist, and started running trade associations with my last career move for 8 years, running the Bowling Proprietors Association of America, all the bowling centers in the country. I was the CEO of that company, and I retired from that to move from the corporate chaos, even though it was fun, with all the agendas. I retired from that to go to St. Martin. And along the way, for 20 years before I retired or semi-retired, I had decided when we first visited St. Martin, around 1996, I had made the decision sitting on the island of Saba that what I should do is perfumes, because I looked around and saw all the beautiful flowers and say, what the smells of the island are so incredible. I had a little chemistry background. I said, wow, I'm going to start studying this. So for 15 or 20 years, I had a lab in my house. I studied, I hired some chemists, perfumers. My best consultant was a guy at the Atlanta Fragrance Company when I was living in Atlanta. He directed me through many stages. I experimented. I spent a lot of money creating formulas and tossing them and creating more, even though we had the best smelling trash in Atlanta. But it was real therapy. And I just loved how two different oils, two different scents could be blended together to create an entirely new scent. The challenge and the endless opportunities to do that, and the possibility of making other people happy through a nice scent, was so fantastic. And then we go to Dijon, and it was so nice because everyone coming into the building, they were in a good mood. They were smelling perfumes. Many were tourists. They were happy. They buy perfume or make perfume, they would pay us and they would thank us. Unlike when I was a boy growing up working in my father's hardware store, everybody who came in, no one was happy because they all were buying things to go to work.
Mm-hmm. Or supplies to fix things.
Yeah. So I kind of just wanted, really, it was a semi-retirement just to go to the island, have fun. I did not need to work for money. We were never open on weekends. We didn't want to work that hard. We just wanted to pay the bills. And shockingly to us, it actually turned into a business. And what transformed the business was the make your own perfume classes. And we were not smart enough to offer that ourselves. We had customers come in, look at our perfume organ with 300 oils and say, hey, can we mix them together? And we had enough people ask that. So we started creating some classes. And it took off from there.
That's so cool. I like that that was driven by customers.
Yep.
That's completely cool. No, and I think that the Fragrance Lab, there's a few other places that do it, but it's still, it's not that many. There's only a handful.
No, there are other places that do it. The Fragonard does it in France, and they do a nice job. There's a lot of small ma and pa places around the country in the U.S., but we have yet to find any place that does it to the extent that we do it, meaning that when you come in, you get a workbook, you get a lab coat.
I love that.
You get detailed instruction. You get to choose from over 300 oils. You get to make at least 3 perfumes, bottle and leave with the one you like best. You get a certificate, a champagne toast, a gift bag of our products in Tijan scents. And we keep your file on your formula on file if you want to later reorder it as a perfume, cream, lotion, home and linen mist, et cetera. So we know no other place that does it to that extent, but there's still many other wonderful places out there.
Your perfumer brethren. Yeah, you'd enjoy the chat I had, almost a year ago with Sarah McCartney, who runs a small fragrance house, 4160 Tuesdays. You'd love her story. She was a writer, and she wrote a novel where her main character was a perfumer and decided that she couldn't write about a perfumer unless she herself learned how to be a perfumer. And now her perfume business is far more successful than the novel, which I do want to read. Sounds intriguing. But I just love that.
Yeah. Meeting other perfumers is such a wonderful adventure because they're also very creative.
Oh, I so smart, so creative, usually creative in multiple genres and just such an inquisitive intellect. And I think, you know, it's kind of intrinsic to this art form, because if you're thinking, what happens if I take this oil and mix it with that oil, you know, that's kind of a endless curiosity.
And what most people don't understand is that the creation of perfume is cerebral, not nasal. It's up in the brain, not the nose that much. The nose may smell the molecules, but it's the brain that inputs and does the adjustments.
I see so many parallels between not just music composition, actually, but music recording and the sort of symbiosis of chemistry and art, or science and art, that is perfuming. It's
Mark, that's why the perfume organ is called an organ, because it's shaped like a musical organ for easy access, and because every different oil creates a different note in the final composition.
I love when I first walked in, I'm like, that's perfect. And I didn't even realize actually how perfect it was until... It was a couple of years later. Visiting your shop was the sort of the beginning of my becoming aware of what a wonderful world there is to be had. Elizabeth was already pretty immersed in it, and she's gotten me far more knowledgeable. I don't have the vocabulary to describe, but I do now have an appreciation. And actually, pretty much every day I get up and I put on one scent or another in the morning. Which I never did. I mean, the only time I ever did that was when my girlfriend in high school bought me a bottle of Lagerfeld, and I put that on for a couple of years. And then I stopped wearing anything at all until just actually after we visited you and kind of started getting me interested in wearing stuff. But the organ, that was such an impressive thing when I walked in. I'm like, yes, that makes perfect sense. I get it. Like right away, I'm like, yes, that's a really great.
It's also kind of a pun.
Yeah.
The sense organ, when your nose is a sense organ.
Yep. And believe it or not, there's actually erectile tissue in the nose.
Oh, I do believe it, actually.
Yeah. And ladies and gentlemen,
I just sniffed, and I was like, well, there it is.
Yep. And that sends the signals to the brain.
How does anyone flare their nostrils without that tissue?
Right.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And now we have an explicit warning on our podcast. No,
actually, we've done relatively little swearing on this podcast.
So far, we haven't done any.
We haven't sworn once on this entire episode.
It's all permitted. We don't.
We do allow the most colorful language. Our only hard and fast rule is anytime someone utters the name of the 45th orange.
Yeah, we don't.
Guy, we bleep it.
I do bleep that out because he's had his name uttered enough. So that was my thing.
We bleep that one out.
But other than that, any language that you see fit, if it's appropriate for what you're trying to describe, we welcome it.
Definitely. So Your store, Tijon, takes its name from your oldest kid, right?
Yeah, actually, our youngest. We have two children.
Youngest. I got the order mixed up.
Yeah, I was sitting in Atlanta one night. I'd moved down there. My family had yet to join me, thinking, what can we name it? And it hit me. His name is Tyler John. So I said, Tijon. I combined it, Tijon. And it sounded French, like Dijon mustard. So I said, Tijon became the name, but not to hurt my oldest child, the daughter. So I named my first perfume after her. Her name is Rochelle, or Shelley. So we called it Chalet.
Oh, fun.
That's awesome.
That's so cool. I still have the little bottle of Au Contraire I got in my gift bag when I made Lady Macduff. And that's one of my alternates, too. It's a beautiful smell.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a good one. Yeah.
It's a little spicy. You like it spicy, and I do, too.
I do. I guess spicy with, like, a bit of an old book kind of leather thing, maybe a little bit of a tobacco thing. Honestly, obviously, I don't believe in genders for fragrances. I think wear what you think smells good.
Yeah, and that's the way it should be, because most people don't realize two things. 33% of all men's perfumes are actually bought and worn by women. And second, perfumes really are not gender specific. There's no such thing. It's the promotion and marketing that steers a person to a certain perfume. All perfumes for thousands of years were unisex until 1921, when the first popular perfume, Chanel No. 5, mm-hmm. began marketing to women. Before that, for hundreds or thousands of years, there was perfume, and it was always considered unisex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. Actually, thinking about it, aside from the fact that I have such olfactory memory of Chanel No. 5 for a number of reasons, including I think my mom used to wear it.
And your ex-wife.
My ex-wife, that was one of her things, of course.
That can't be a good scent memory.
It's well, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of reasons why, like, maybe Chanel No. 5 would not be something that I wear, but I do know what it smells like, and actually, it probably would smell good on me. I think it probably would.
Why not?
Exactly. But I'm not going to.
Fun little trivia, most people don't know, everybody knows Old Spice. It was actually introduced in 1937 for women. It didn't sell well, so they launched it a year later for men.
and now they're marketing it. I've seen ads, like on YouTube and stuff. I've seen online ads where they're like, the woman's like, yep, I'm wearing your thing. And the guy's like, huh, you're wearing my stuff? Yeah, I'm wearing your stuff. And it's like, okay, that's gone 180 back again. That's funny.
Yep.
Do you have any favorite classic perfumes?
You know, in college, I wore Aramis and still enjoy the smell today. It transports me back to my younger days. And Aramis, actually, when it was first introduced, I think it was 1965, was actually introduced for women, and they changed it around for men.
That's story.
My personal classic is... But now I just wear my own because I have enough choices internally.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, I used to be a signature scent lady, and I've since gotten to be more fickle. I have like a whole wardrobe from all different houses.
And that's smart, though, because it's like, I can't remember who said it, but they said wearing the same scent every day is akin to eating pizza every day for lunch. You know, life is, you have many options in life. Life is an adventure. Be different. Enjoy. Smell things differently.
Yeah. And don't let olfactory fatigue, so you can't smell your favorite perfume, settle in because your nose will.
Well, you understand that. A lot of people don't, but that's so true, because people that wear the same perfume day in and day out, they'll stop smelling it after a certain time. Right.
Definitely.
That's where over-application probably comes from.
Yep.
Oh, I bet.
Yep. That makes so much sense.
I've met a few people who probably suffer from that.
So I liked, as I was reading in the first edition, I think that there will be things that carry over from the first to the second.
Sure. Absolutely.
I just love your humor. And there's a whole section where you talk about starting to learn French, and where you at first had used human translators, but then start, just to save some money, using an online source, and you'd ordered a bunch of postcards.
Yeah, that stayed in the second edition. I ordered postcards and online translation. It was about our Arawak dog, which was our mascot. And I was saying how the Islanders like dogs. But actually what I said after it was translated properly was that Islanders are dogs.
Oops. Oh, jeez. Oh, boy.
That's my bad. Whole lot of, no, I love this. And you do have a lovely kind of self-deprecating humor that carries throughout the book and makes it super fun to read.
Well, in the beginning of my second edition, I make note that when the first book came out, a lady came into our shop and said, "Hey, I really liked the book, but I just couldn't stay awake reading it last night." So I commended her for the purchase and said, "You know, you made a great buy for two reasons. Number one, the cover has a nice photo, so it's a good coffee table book. And second, if you have trouble sleeping tonight, read it for 10 minutes."
A sleep aid. So I wonder if we should segue to another excerpt.
Let me kind of give you my concluding excerpt, if you don't mind. It's about two paragraphs. So it's a conclusion of kind of the first half of the book, as the second part is more of a travel story. This is after all the hurricane, the COVID, and all the good and the bad. It starts, "I was less controlling, more relaxed, and more free-flowing. Even if the economy was in shambles and business was uncertain, my dream of island life had come true. No matter what was happening around me, I had become flexible and compassionate. Life was as relaxed and easygoing as I wanted it to be. My spirit had healed. Coming to St. Martin wasn't about wealth or success. It was about transformation. And as I watched the dusk gently slip away, I turned back to the glowing windows of the place I was staying. They spilled yellow light onto the warm, inky blackness of the street. Life is good, Mon."
Oh, that's so beautiful, John.
Oh.
Thanks so much for that. This has been so much fun, John.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
So much fun. Well, I like our guests to kind of feel like there are guests at a dinner party. And what would we talk about? Sort of like that.
Well,
sort of a
this has felt not like a dinner party, more like a family reunion. So thank you.
Aww, oh, family reunion. I love that even more.
Yeah.
So there's so much we could talk about, but I feel like we should start to wrap up. And as you noticed, I don't interview. We don't interview. We just get people talking, have them share some of, if they've got a book, share excerpts and just in general have a chat. But I do close every episode with the same three questions that I ask every guest. So
I think before we get into that, John, if you have anything else you want to add before we get into our closing questions.
No, thank you for asking. But no, this has been delightful. I think you've covered a broad spectrum.
Yeah. I'm so glad. So what are you reading these days?
What am I reading? Right now I'm reading a book by Greg Iles on the Kindle. I don't recall the name, but I've read almost every book he's written. I read a lot of, my favorite author is probably Nelson DeMille. I like mostly fictional books to kind of escape the world. I like a lot of courtroom dramas, all fictional. But I do read some historical novels as well.
Nice. And what are you listening to these days? What's on your turntable if you use such an old fashioned device?
Carla Bruni. My favorite French singer is Carla Bruni. My favorite other singer is Stevie Wonder.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Cool. No, she's amazing.
Yeah, we've got a whole long soundtrack that we're going to be playing in our lab when we make during perfume making.
Oh, that's, I like that. I like that. Oh, so you have a curated soundtrack that you play when
they
when,
do. Yeah. I got to enjoy
that's
it.
That's right. I remember you mentioned actually, John, this is significant, is that Elizabeth did mention that there was what seemed to be, if it was not curated, at least, well, in curated in terms of like one song follows the next curated, it was a playlist.
No, we did. We did curate it. And because we actually found that, and we don't know why, the psychology, but different types of music can have different impacts on people's creativity.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes we played my other favorite musician, Danny Wright, a wonderful pianist who visited us in St. Martin, very soft piano music, and that will put people in a comfortable mood, too.
Yeah. I think you and I actually briefly talked about this back then. I have a recollection of at least touching on the music choices. Yeah, I can't remember the specifics, but that's awesome. That's really cool. And it makes perfect sense. I completely understand that.
I think you would like Charlotte Gainsbourg. I'll send you a link, but I think...
Yeah, I would love to. I'm not familiar with it.
Well, you're familiar with Serge Gainsbourg, right?
Serge.
Yes,
Yeah, okay, I mangled his name, but yeah. That's his daughter.
Oh, I haven't heard her.
She's brilliant.
Very contemporary, but still, she's got some of the classic vibe going on in there. She's got her...
It's cool stuff.
She's got her dad's thing in there. Yeah, she's great.
I think it's analogous to Carla Bruni, actually, in a lot of ways.
Yeah. No, you should definitely check her out. She's really good.
Well, I'll send you some stuff. And what are you... I go from higher brow and all the way down to the lowest. What are you watching these days?
Well, believe it or not, in New Orleans, I don't have TV or internet in my little apartment. So I'm watching nothing.
You're watching nothing.
Watching nothing. But what I do watch when I'm home, I like simply to watch the news and sports. And then we're more into the old DVDs of Boston Legal, Ally McBeal, Seinfeld, all those things.
Oh yeah, the classics. Yeah.
Classics.
Yeah. Classic 90s television.
I'd like to go back and rewatch some of that Seinfeld stuff because I remember, you know, I it was contemporary for me at the time too. Of course, like, you know, we're of an age. And it was really good, but I never really had cable, so it was only like the brief moments either I was at somebody else's house or I like the 6 months here and 6 months there that I had cable where I actually would watch it on the regular. But I remember enjoying the hell out of that show.
Yeah, I wonder how many millennials would even get references from Seinfeld. Like, that's a real George Costanza wallet for like a super thick wallet.
Okay, this is when if we actually did have the video running, I would raise my hand and say, guilty.
I called your wallet a George Costanza wallet.
You've called my wallet a George Costanza wallet at least once every 2 years the entire time we've been together.
Yeah, because it's super thick.
Yeah. Oh, I have a habit of saving receipts, which I've finally gotten out of because I realize that they don't do me any good. But I also have a ton of business cards and other cards, and yeah, it's just dumb.
If people want to find you and follow you on social media and online, where should they go?
Well, our website is Tijon, TIJON.com. Email is John, JOHN at Tijon.com. Social media is Tijon at St. Martin, _ St. Martin. That's about as much as I know on social media. I'm not very good at it, although I have someone helping me.
You've got a pretty active Instagram presence.
And thanks to someone helping me.
Well, they're doing a good job.
we'll look into that, and if we can figure that out, we'll add it in the show notes too, because I try to include people's links.
You've got a Facebook presence too, I believe.
Well, we do. We see, I was in St. Martin too long, and I got out of the tech world while I was down there.
It's island life, man.
I could see myself kind of disconnecting from tech there. Yeah, I mean, we did. We disconnected from tech big time when we were there.
Yeah.
We had Wi-Fi at the hotel, but...
We just watched some silly cartoons, usually.
Yeah, I know. We liked to watch TV to wind down at the end of the night, and we ended up watching a bunch of weird cartoons we'd never seen before, and it was kind of like, okay, this is what's on? Fine.
It was fun.
Yeah.
I think we have done this. I think this is great. This has been so much fun. I'm so glad I asked you on, John. You are very invited to send an excerpt just to the meatfortea@gmail.com for us to publish in this next issue.
We'll do it. We'll do it. This has just been such a privilege. Thank you so much. A lot of fun. That's what it's all about.
It is all about that. We wouldn't do this if it wasn't fun. We want our guests to have fun.
Yep. Life is too short otherwise.
That's yes, correct.
Absolutely. That's absolutely a great way to go out. Thank you so much, John, for being our guest on Meat for Tea. We hope to see you again in person at some point. And if you're ever up our way up here in Massachusetts, please let us know in advance.
Well, I hope our paths will cross soon. Thank you.
Yeah, that would be really lovely. So thank you. Right. Thank you, John Berglund, for being on the Meat for Tea cast. And thank you for being somebody that we've gotten to know.
Thank you and have a good night.
You too, well. John. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was great.
Wasn't that fun?
So much fun.
He's such a good guy. His book is coming out November 1st. You can get a copy. This is a new edition. I'm eager to read it. He's made a few changes from the first edition, which I read.
If you're down in New Orleans, as you heard during this episode, you can also go November 1st to the opening of the New Orleans branch of Tijon and
make your own perfume.
Make your own perfume.
It's a treat. It's so much fun.
Or buy one of his, because his are really good too.
Yes, I can recommend Au Contraire.
Mm-hmm. That is a lovely one.
So we put out a call on the Meat for Tea cast Facebook page, which you should follow because fun things happen there. For instance, our calls for six-word stories.
Six-word stories. We have a couple.
The first is from our illustrious friends, the Antler Queens podcast.
All right.
Thank you, Antler Queens. We love you guys. Lost in cursed wilderness, hunger kills. I have no idea what that could be referencing.
I have no idea what they could be referencing.
Showtime. And the second one from our poet friend, Scott Ferry, who will be joining us on the podcast. I believe he'll be on the next time. We're scheduling it now. He laughs with his invisible grandfather.
Wow. That's cool.
Appropriate for spooky season.
It was pretty spooky. Well, that's great. Thank you so much for sticking around, listening to the Meat for Tea cast. Be sure to tell your friends and like and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts and all that other stuff we mentioned at the top of the episode. Thanks a lot. We'll catch you in a couple weeks.
See you next time.
The Meat for Tea cast is produced by Elizabeth McDuffie and Meat for Tea, The Valley Review. Mixed by Mark Allen Miller at Zone Lab, East Hampton, Massachusetts. Visit Meat for Tea at www.meatfortea.com. Please consider going to anchor.fm to make a contribution through our contribution page. You can reach us through meatfortcast@gmail.com, or you can leave a voice message at anchor.fm/meatfortcast. We welcome suggestions for contents for the Meat for Tea cast. If you've attended a Meat for Tea circ and want to hear from one of the bands or one of the spoken word contributors, please let us know. All portions are copyright Meat for Tea and their respective holders. Vote for Meat for Tea on your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter at Elizabeth. Meat for Tea on Instagram. And on the Meat for Tea and Meat for Tea cast Facebook pages. Meat for Tea is available everywhere you get your favorite podcasts.